ballet lessons yourself the other week. Would you like to do some dancing like that? Yeah?
Yes, yes, we?
Yes!
So, why is the dancing that you saw tonight different from the dancing that you're learning?
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
Alligator Pie from Dennis Lee. Alligator pie, alligator pie. If I don't get some, I think I'm gonna die. Give away the green grass, give away the sky, but don't give away my alligator pie. Alligator stew, if I don't get some, I don't know what I'll do. Give away my furry hat, give away my shoe, but don't give away my alligator stew. Alligator soup, if I don't get some, I think I'm gonna droop. Give away my hockey stick, give away my hoop, but don't give away my alligator soup. Good evening. You're listening to Audio Text on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is JC Peters, and this is your Canadian writing show. So every Wednesday at 6 o'clock, I will play recordings of spoken word poetry, page poetry that's being read by authors who are visiting, interviews, short stories, stuff like that. And today I'm very happy to report that I'm doing a children's literature show because I think that children's literature is one of the most fascinating genres out there. There's a lot going on with children's literature. It's the very first stories that children hear, and the first narratives that we grow up with are the ones we carry with us throughout our lives. And I had the pleasure this weekend of going to the Word on the Street Festival, and I met there Michael Sassy, who is a writer of children's literature. He's been published so far in a few magazines and journals, including Croteau's Quarterly, which I've talked about on this show before. It's a really amazing children's magazine that has great illustrations and sort of subscribes to the philosophy that children shouldn't really be talked down to, and that children's short stories shouldn't necessarily be all about fluffy bunnies and cupcakes and stuff like that, because that's not what life is. And if these are the first narratives you're going to hear, you have to understand a little bit about what life is, and it's not all fluffy bunnies and cupcakes, as any of you listening must probably already know. So I'm going to play an interview that I did with Michael Sassy, as well as a story that he read at Word on the Street, in just a few moments. Before we get to all of that stuff, some listings. There's a lot going on this week, and specifically there's a lot going on tonight. I think there are 4 separate events that you can go to in terms of literary events. So today is September 30th, Wednesday. Happening at the Anza Club tonight, there is a Talon Books poetry event. Fred Waugh is going to be there with some friends. That's 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. It's a free night. Go grab a drink, watch some poetry. It's going to be Fred Waugh, Daphne Marlatt, Colin Brown, Jeff Dirksen, Roy McKee, and George Bowering is going to be emceeing. So that should be really great. If you've heard of any of those poets before, they're all really excellent Canadian poets. So that's at the Anza Club tonight. Also tonight, there is a team slam happening at Café du Soleil. The Vancouver Poetry Slam is getting teams together that will compete against each other. So last month's champs, including Angus Adair, Lisa Slater, Zacchaeus Jackson, and Clint Father Goose Wilson, who actually is another writer of children's poetry, but I don't have any recordings of him doing it yet. I promise I will one day. He's a really great poet for children's poetry as well, just as an aside. And they're going to be defending their crown against Sweater Vest, which is a team including R.C. Wislowski, Vitamin F, Martin Van Steinberg, and a mystery guest, and possibly you. So if you go there at 8 o'clock and sign up, you could be a part of this team and compete with these wonderful poets. So that's happening at Café du Soleil tonight, Commercial Drive and Fifth. What else? Tonight, contributors Charlotte Gill, Jaspreet Singh, and John Vigna are going to be launching Cabin Fever at the Banff Centre's newest literary journalism anthology, and that's going to be at the Brick House tonight, which is 730 Main Street, and I think that's happening around 7 o'clock. Also, Poetic Intercourse is an event that's going to be including Montreal poets Caroline Marie Suide and Andre Farkas, and they're going to be presenting Poetic Conversation, so that's at the Vancouver Public Library, 7 to 9 p.m. That's enough for tonight. It's probably too much to go to all at once, but there's more. Tomorrow, October 1st, the Twisted Poets Literary Salon is coming back. Tomorrow night, they're going to be featuring Shannon Rain and Warren Dean Fulton. That's going to be 7 to 9 p.m. at the Cambie Bakery and Cafe, 312 Cambie, which is just north of Hastings, and that's going to be hosted by Pandora's Collective, so that's tomorrow, October 1st. Also, October 1st, if you haven't already heard, Margaret Atwood, who is the one Canadian poet you probably have heard of if you haven't been listening to the show, is going to be coming to read at the St. Andrew's Wesleyan Church, which is 1022 Nelson Street. She's going to be debuting her new novel, The Year of the Flood, with a dramatic reading and a book signing. Proceeds are going to Nature Canada. So more information about that at www.writersfest.bc.ca. Tickets are $15 to $17, and that's starting at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow. All right, Saturday, October 3rd. A couple of things during the day from 10 to 6 p.m. This is Saturday and Sunday. There's going to be a huge book sale. A friend of mine went last weekend and said it was absolutely amazing, and it was so amazing that they're doing it again this weekend. Apparently, the children of the late Jim Anderson, who is an English professor, has 600 books that he had collected throughout his life, and his kids need to get rid of these books somehow. So they're going to be selling them off from an art space on Hastings Street. The address is 165 East Hastings, so it's right at Hastings in Maine. It's the ground floor. Apparently the selection is really great, so that's 10 to 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday this weekend coming up. And finally, Saturday, another thing happening. Arsenal Pulp Press and Geist Magazine is presenting Rhonda Waterfall at the launch of her debut story collection. More information about that at arsenalpulp.com. And Sunday, finally, The Moon of Letting Go is an event including Richard Van Camp and Ivan Coyote and Gregory Schofield for a launch of Richard Van Camp's new collection of short stories. So that's going to be at the First Nations House of Learning, 1985 West Mall, UBC. So if I went a little too fast going through that those numerous listings, you can always go and check them out again at the Georgia Straits website, straight.com, and kswnet.org, which is the Kootenai School of Writing, often has good listings as well. Yes, so those are some of the things that are happening over the next week or so. But we return to our children's literature show. So first of all, I'm going to play for you the excerpt of the story that Michael Sassy read at this year's Word on the Street at the Vancouver Public Library this past Sunday. So this is Michael Sassy.
If you guys read the advertising, I'm scheduled to read from Super Rupert, but because I'm an adult, I changed my mind, and I'm going to read from the fifth issue of Proto's Quarterly, the Wickedly Wealthy Charlie Forbes franchise. Thank you. I've been working on this book for about 6 years, and it still hasn't gone anywhere, but this summer, I sent in a revision to a person in New York. And we're still waiting to hear, but I'm going to share a part that no one has ever actually heard before. So let's see what happens. Okay, really quick backstory. Charlie Forbes comes home one day and he finds that his house has been foreclosed on. So him and his family have to move provided her house, and Nene now has to go to a new school, a corporately sponsored one. So naturally, Charlie goes to school in a soda factory, and in this scene, his principal, Principal Henry BFA, he has an arts degree, is giving the class a tour of the factory. Okay, so let's do it. "Gather around," said Principal Henry BFA, leading a hairless purple crowd in front of an empty concentrate tower. "Gather around. I have a special treat. This is not usually part of the tour, but today we are introducing a new flavor to the line." The principal pulled a pair remote out of his pocket and stopped the music. "This here is Sherbert. Say hello to Sherbert." Chorus the class. "Sherbert is from a rare breed of cattle raised in Philadelphia on nothing but a staple of sassafras and candy. One at a time, do not crowd one another. You are welcome to come up here and have a taste." "Blah, that's revolting," said Brooklyn. "It's almost enough to turn me into a coletarian." The children kept their distance. "No one?" said the principal. "Hey, Charlie, I dare you to try it," said Chance, loud enough for everyone to hear. Charlie wanted to punch Chance in the head. Tasting that cow was the last thing he wanted to do, at least without a barbecue. Plus, he always thought his first kiss would be in private, with a girl. He couldn't very well back down from a dare in front of Brooklyn, though. "I'll do it," volunteered Charlie. "Excellent. That's very attention-seeking of you. Step up here with me. Don't be shy. She won't bite. Her teeth rotted away months ago." The purple cow looked as unimpressed as Charlie. He approached her emaciated body and knelt down at her side, reaching for one of her udders. "No, no, pupil. Purple cows don't produce milk. They can't. Anymore. You just go on and give her a lick. Right here. A little peck on the neck. Don't worry, sanitation is our highest priority." Charlie could see all the finer lines, purple wrinkles and pink veins. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath. He leaned forward, bringing his lips within an inch of Sherbert's clammy skin. He counted down from 3, 2, 1, and shot his tongue out like a lizard eating an ice cream cone. It wasn't exactly what he expected, or half bad either. "Hey, root beer float," said Charlie. "She tastes like a root beer float." Led by Of course she does. Now get. You had your 15 seconds. Led by Charlie's example, everyone, other than Brooklyn, wanted a taste. Charlie felt like a trendsetter. "Soon," said Principal Henry BFA proudly, "that empty vat behind me will be full of all natural concentrate that tastes just like sherbet." Piccadilly Cola's purple moo, without further ado. The foreman led Sherbert away on a very long leash, and the principal climbed the stairs that wound around the empty tower, staring at his reflection in the glass the whole way up. "Do you hear that?" asked Charlie. "Hear what, cowlicker?" said Brooklyn. "Listen." It sounded like static at first. As it got louder, more like a helicopter. The music kicked back in, some people started clapping in rhythm. The skylights were closed, the lights in the factory were dim, curtains parted, revealing an orchestra. Another curtain was raised, the employees were beating their hands together freakishly. From a metal platform at the top of the tower, Principal Henry BFA grabbed a control panel with a long extension cord. A spotlight fell on him as he pushed a button and the metal lid separated. "I think I know what that sound is," said Brooklyn. Hundreds of thousands of trained hummingbirds swarmed into the factory, hovering in the shape of the Piccadilly Cola logo. They formed into two groups, a flask and a glass, and poured back into one another, smoothly transitioning into the Piccadilly Cola slogan, "The cola that tastes like cola cola." A yellow bear added some tiddlypoms to the song, followed by a pageant of men in peacock costumes showing their colors. Gymnasts in spandex costumes did backflips, lions and tigers and ligers jumped and juggled, and some jellybean dancers jiggled and jelly danced as pyrotechnics exploded in three great trumpets of indigo light. A massive metal funnel, striped like a candy cane, was gently lowered from the roof by mechanical means over the opening of the tank and locked into position. "Drum roll," announced Principal Henry BFA. The music cut, the hummingbirds perched, the animals and dancers were sent back to their cages. The spotlight was focused on the funnel. There was a perfect silence as the drum roll ended with the clash of a cymbal. The children remained very still. A single drop of purple cow syrup dripped from the shaft and blooped at the bottom of the tower. Principal Henry had BFA had his arms outstretched in a tie-down pose. Charlie looked to Brooklyn and Chance to see if he was missing something. "Is that it?" he said quietly. few of the kids clapped. There is absolutely nothing entertaining about distilling concentrate. It is a slow and expensive process requiring acres and acres of patience. Algernon Rollins, the owner of the Piccadilly Cola Brewing Company, was once quoted as follows: "Making soda is like writing. It's about as exciting as watching water boil." "Show's over," said the principal. "Back to class." Thanks very much.
You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
I stopped trying to define punk around the same time I stopped trying to define Islam. They aren't so far removed as you'd think. Both began in tremendous bursts of truth and vitality that seemed to have lost something along the way. The energy, perhaps, it comes with knowing the world has never seen such positive force and fury and never would again. Both have suffered from sellouts and hypocrites, but also from true believers whose devotion had crippled their creative drive. Both are viewed by outsiders as unified, cohesive communities where nothing can be further from the truth. I could go on, but the most important similarity is that, like punk, Islam is itself a flag, an open symbol representing not things, but ideas. You cannot hold punk or Islam in your hands, so what could they mean besides what you want them to?
CITR and the Vancouver International Film Festival present Twakor, The Birth of Punk Islam. Misfit Muslims the world over embracing a new subculture called Twakor, otherwise known as punk Islam. The film follows the three misfit rebels who dreamed up the whole thing.
"We should go out west sometime and just load up a van till we can't fit no more and then have guys hanging off the side like in Rawalpindi. Down the I-90. Get a van, make like an interstate jamaat."
Twakor, The Birth of Punk Islam is played Saturday, October 3rd at 9:30 p.m. and Monday, October 5th at 1:15 p.m. at the Empire Granville Cinema. Brought to you by the Vancouver International Film Festival and CITR 101.9 Vancouver.
Next up, my interview with Michael Sassy.
So I'm sitting here with Michael Sassy at the Vancouver Public Library. And we've just been out at Word on the Street at the Kids' Tent, and Michael Sassy has been talking a little bit about the magazine Crow Toes and reading a bit from his recent work. So thanks so much, Michael, for talking to CITR today.
Thanks for having me.
So the first question I wanted to ask you is, one of the reasons I find children's literature so interesting is because it's the first thing that kids are exposed to. I know as a woman, fairy tales are something that, you know, we have to kind of fight against as we get older, because these first stories that we read leave impressions in our minds that are not necessarily that healthy later. So I find the politics behind children's literature really interesting, and I was wondering what you thought about all of that.
Yeah, it's something that I'm struggling with right now and finding out more about as I delve deeper into the industry is there's a diverse view of what's appropriate for children and what basically what we should be teaching them. I come from the viewpoint that literature for children really isn't that, shouldn't be that different from literature for adults. Basically, yeah, I mean, number one is to entertain. You're not in this market, you're not going to share your work with anyone if you're not entertaining, first, number one. But number two is to honesty, really. And I would agree with that, like a syrupy kind of surface level story in which everything is happy kind of freaks me out a little bit. It's not how the world works, and anyone who's kind of brought up in that that kind of household or society, at some point it's going to get slammed in their faces in their life, and they're going to have a lot more soul searching or research or reading or some kind of journey that they're going to have to go on to figure out what's really going on and what forces are at work in their life. So I also say that on a grammatical or reading difficulty level. I mean, when I was in grade 3, I wanted to read J.R.R. Tolkien, and I wanted to read Lord of the Rings. I didn't want to ever be limited by the ideas or by the difficulty of what's there. A.A. Milne, I think, is he's written in those short stories, the Winnie the Pooh series, he's written the best piece of literature that I've still come across. Just the wordplay and the ideas are just delightful and clever, and so many layers of meaning and looking at things from different angles. I'm right under the pen name MST Company, so a corporation, and according to the law, a person who types children's fictions for money. So that's a long blurb, but basically, early on, I set out my children's literature would be about money, basically. And so I read from the Wickedly Wealthy Charlie Forbes franchise, which on one level talks about Charlie Forbes and all his little friends who are going through a recession, not unlike the one that's happening now. I didn't anticipate that when I started the novel, so it's just the timing is good there. So they end up, Charlie comes home, and he's kind of an entrepreneur. He's always been an entrepreneurial kid, and he comes home and he finds that his house has been foreclosed on, and his family is homeless. So they end up going on this journey in which they are living in their car, and his father's sick, and none of his questions are being answered, and he's kind of discovering. Anyway, Charlie and his friends, they end up having to start a company in order to save their parents, whose jobs have become technologically obsolete. So they accomplish this, and they kind of find out through the process that all the grandeur of their school, which is corporately sponsored, they go to school in a soda factory. That's all kind of surface. They enjoy it. They're blinded by it at first, but they can never touch it. It's not tangible to them. They're always kept away from it. And all the real magical and important moments happen to them when they're living on the street and pursuing their goal and of helping their parents and being able to live and eat. And, so on one level, it's, you know, the surface plot moves fast about these kids. But on the second level, it's about starting a literary empire. So it's the Charlie Forbes franchise now refers not just to the company that the kids start in the book, it refers to the book and the idea of a series itself. So there's a lot of commentary about the state of the publishing industry and where we're going with it, and it would be one of those books where you read it one way as a child and you come back to it a few years later, and there's different ideas there that you can access. So.
So can you just talk a little bit about Crow Toes? This is a magazine that you've been involved with since its inception.
Yeah, it started three years ago, and I saw the website through some kind of directory, writer's directory, and I thought it was amazing. I thought it was this massive operation when I looked at the website, and I was simultaneously enthralled and a little bit jealous, because I was like, wow, those guys are amazing. I just want to be part of that. I'd pretty much do anything to be part of that. And I sent in a story I'd been working on for quite a while, and that was the first publication that I ever landed. And since then, I've gone to know Christopher Millen, who's publisher editor, and he's been on board with me since day one, and I just absolutely appreciate his enthusiasm. And so we're on the exact same page as to what children's literature should be. And originally, things happened really quickly with it, so we brought the first issue out, and the third issue, I got published in the third issue, we found Christian Adam in an art gallery here, and we brought him on board, and instantly got into chapters, and sales within all those stores was really good. So yeah, just plodded along. We slowly did more things. We did a launch last year. Unfortunately, with the way things, the economy is right now, we're forced Christopher to kind of pull distribution back a little bit, and just run single print issues and a quarterly e-zine, and that's definitely sustainable for the near future, and hopefully more and more people will find it and it can continue to grow. Because it's an important, I think it's a really, really important, whether it's only, if it's only 200 people who read the magazine, Chris is doing an amazing job, and it's an important thing for Canadian children's writers to have that kind of, to have that place where they can be filtered and presented in such a enthusiastic fashion.
Great. Thanks so much, Michael, for talking to CITR today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. Cheers.
Carrie, darling, Carrie Brown, I cried. If I can't marry Carrie Brown, believe I'd rather die.
You have wandered into the folk oasis. Welcome to it.
Stop the world and let me on.
You are indeed listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I've been trying to keep my mouth shut, baby. Change my dark ways, maybe.
Yes, 8 to 10 p.m. every Wednesday night. It's me, Val, hosting 2 hours of eclectic roots music.
I went downstairs to hear the sound. Broken, lean, and singing song tonight.
Folk Oasis.
Sadly, we only have time for one spoken word recording of an approximation of children's literature, so I'm going to play this one-minute piece by Patrick Swan.
This is called Old Man Murder. This is, here we go. Old Man Murder makes monkeys out of meat. He makes them slaves by paying their wage and saying, type or you won't eat. He builds their homes from children's bones and mouths they're forced to feed with a paste he's made from debt and aged crushed up monkey dreams. But Old Man Murder knows these monkey clones can all be put to use as his business grows like the children's toes that will fill the shoes of suits. And as the days go by, the monkeys hide from a world beyond their desk. Well, they wait to die and leave this life in the suits that they are dressed.
That was Patrick Swan. No fluffy bunnies or cupcakes in there, indeed. So to close the show, I'm just going to read a couple more of Dennis Lee's children's poetry. You may already know, if you've been listening to the show, that Dennis Lee is pretty much my favorite poet. When I was a kid, my parents read to me Alligator Pie and Garbage Delight, which are two of his most popular children's books. You might remember them if you're around my age. Dennis Lee as well has the same philosophy that he doesn't really want to talk about fairy tales and being rescued by princes or anything that really sets down specifically gender roles for men and women. And he has, like, you know, great little poems about little girls eating the monsters under their beds and stuff like that. So he kind of he tries to empower children right from the very start. So I'm just going to read a couple of poems to you here today from Dennis Lee, and so that you can get a sense of what his children's poetry is all about. It still sounds kind of silly, but if you listen to the words, it's actually quite smart. This one is called Thinking in Bed. I'm thinking in bed because I can't get out till I learn how to think what I'm thinking about. What I'm thinking about is a person to be, a sort of person who feels like me. I might still be Alice, excepting I'm not, and Snoopy is super, but not when it's hot. I couldn't be Piglet, I don't think I'm Pooh, I know I'm not Daddy, and I can't be you. My breakfast is waiting, my clothes are all out, but what was that thing I was thinking about? I'll never get up if I lie here all day, but I still haven't thought, so I'll just have to stay. If I was a Grinch, I expect I would know, but I don't think so. There's so many people I don't seem to be, I guess I'll just have to get up and be me. What will you be? They never stop asking me, what will you be? A doctor, a dancer, a diver at sea. They never stop bugging me, what will you be? As if they expect me to stop being me. When I grow up, I'm going to be a sneeze and sprinkle germs on all my enemies. When I grow up, I'm going to be a toad and dump on silly questions in the road. When I grow up, I'm going to be a child. I'll play the whole darn day and drive them wild. So those are just two short poems from Dennis Lee. And to finish the show, since I'm feeling a bit childlike and silly today, it happens to be my